This is the best of Radio Wasteland.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome to Radio Wasteland, the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm your host, Chauncey Haworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick.
Hell yeah.
You got any news for us this evening, Kara?
Oh, no. I'm not doing that anymore.
Well, then,
No, I have
you can go home.
Yeah, okay. No, I have news. Don't send me away.
All right. What
this is all I have. Okay. A short video published last week by U.S. Marine Corps veteran Miles Panache describes a UFO sighting over a Lake Michigan nuclear power station in March. The video appears to depict a massive triangular craft floating through the air above the Point Beach nuclear plant. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange was arrested Thursday in London after a 7-year stay in the Ecuadorian embassy. In 2010, Assange began publishing diplomatic secrets with the help of American intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning. Recently, Assange has come under fire for his role in releasing thousands of hacked Democratic emails, but he is currently only facing legal trouble for, quote, conspiring to commit unlawful computer intrusion based on his agreement with Ms. Manning. The Chinese government has created an AI to track Uyghurs, a predominantly Muslim Chinese minority group. The algorithm is designed to identify Uyghur racial attributes and has been criticized for essentially being a racial profiling machine. Although people have long considered that such algorithms merely automate human bias, China seems to be explicitly attempting to do just that, using technology to track and control a specific racial group. This comes after years of reports that China has detained about 1 million Uyghurs in Chinese indoctrination camps designed to, quote, curb extremism. And, of course, last week humanity took a great step forward when astronomers released the first image of a black hole. And because we can't have nice things, men's rights activists, incels, and pickup artists are claiming that the black hole photo was faked in order to make computer scientist Katie Bowman, who compiled the images, look good. Others in the same group claimed that Bowman was actually minimally responsible for creating the code, pointing to other members of the team instead. Despite fellow scientists taking to Twitter to set the sexists straight, such conspiracy theories are likely to continue. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right. You know, this seems the Marine sighting. Was that a government video or was he a Marine that took the video?
He was a former Marine.
So the video was taken post.
Right. He was just a private citizen.
I see.
But he was at one point a Marine. Which
Not that I'm negating it because of that. I just you know, there's been so much release of.
Right.
Government stuff.
No, you're right.
Yeah, I was making the connection, you know, maybe jumping to conclusions there. I got to say, Julian Assange.
Mm-hmm. Polarizing figure.
I've always thought this guy was shady. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I can't find a hero in somebody who... Okay, this guy got kicked out of the Ecuadorian embassy because he was a jerk.
That is true.
He didn't get kicked out for anything else. He got kicked out for basically not only looking like, but living like Trevor Slattery from the third
Iron Man movie.
Iron Man movie. Yeah. So he like looks like the Mandarin, the actor that played the Mandarin. And apparently he lived in squalor. There was like fecal stuff on the walls. It's like just nasty, absolutely nasty.
Right.
And the Ecuadorians are all like, this this guy that. So how are we supposed to take this guy seriously?
That's true. He is kind of like the Swamp Witch version of Edward Snowden. But
yeah,
still.
Totally. Yeah, Snowden, he had a haircut. You know, there's something about a haircut. You know, when you go to court, nobody's just, you know, I'm going to grow out my hermit beard for court.
I'm glad this is the level our discourse is on. It's like, well, he had a businessman cut. He seems fine in my opinion.
Right. <totally. laughs> Well, I mean, you know, it's true. All right,
I don't know. I have mixed feelings on him.
I do, too. I don't know. You know, it's like, I do think that our government's lying to us, but I also,
right.
I don't trust multimillionaires either.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of my thing.
I don't see how we landed in this world where we're all the government's out to get us. Let's put our faith in corporate executives. It's like, no, yeah. They're out to get you, too. The reason why your government is out to get you is because they're in the pocket of corporate executives. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I appreciate him being whistleblower, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
I can tell you, I am not going to blow that whistle after him because he's gross.
Well, yeah, get a different whistle. But, yeah. Okay. I guess technically Chelsea Manning is the one who is the whistleblower.
Okay. Well, she's clean, you know.
Yeah, she's fine.
She's clean. Yeah.
She's in prison.
I mean, physically clean.
Right.
You know, clean as far as, like, legally, probably not.
No fecal material on
right.
the walls.
Yes, exactly. The Chinese, you know, building the world's first racist computer. That's.
I mean, far from the first racist computer, but they did it on purpose.
No, I don't know. We are right on the cusp of true AI. So this is
right.
The world's first computer. The world's first artificially, truly sentient computer might be a raging racist because it was made that way.
Yeah, that's quite possible. That's something people are worried about. So this isn't the first kind of system that's, like, designed to track suspects or whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of these systems have had this issue where it's, like, we weren't trying to design it that way, but, you know, just based on the data we had.
Right, of course. Your biases go into everything. You know,
it's exactly.
Like, now we're going to have to build a, like, white nationalist computer to, like, go against the Chinese racist computer.
Exactly.
They can duke it out in, like, war games or whatever, you know, and
but,
play a game.
But China was like, this computer is going to repress this racial group. And it's like, no, that's exactly what we want. Turn it on.
Right, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Like, China, as far as, like, Chinese Muslims are concerned, they have really not been cool in the last decade.
Well, I mean, the Hatebot 2000 seems like it's going to take care of it. But, okay, so this is a question that I got for you. So I have heard a lot about the Chinese, you know, coming down on their Muslim population.
Yeah.
And, you know, on a safety level, I mean, I don't get it, but I mean, I understand what's going on. We live in a world and we're trying to be concerned about that. But when I hear about terror attacks and stuff like that, I don't know if I've ever heard of one in China.
Well, there have
do
been.
They happen?
There have been extremist attacks in China. It's a huge country. We don't even hear about a lot of stuff that goes on there because people, frankly, aren't really that interested.
Right. I see. Yeah.
But yeah, there have been terrorist attacks, but like, there's about 11 million Uyghurs in China. They've put about 1 million in concentration camps, essentially. Mm. That strikes me as an overreaction. Like, they're, you know, putting women and children in camps where they're educated not to be their religion just because.
Yeah. But this
it's
country,
not great.
China is not exactly the good guys.
No.
I mean,
no.
They did build the hate. They did build the hate.
They
bot
did
2000,
build the hate
you know?
Bot. Yeah, I'm critical of like a lot of countries. I'm very critical of the U.S., but like it's hard to do worse than China, man.
Yeah, unfortunately, when you get groups of people together, you know, they get scared. I got to move on before we get to the end here. First black hole photo ever fake, whatever. Those people can go to HE Double Hockey Sticks. Space is important to me. I was really upset that this came on the news, and it was considered like the last story at the end of the list, at the end of the evening, and I'm just all, great, one of the greatest steps in human technology, and they're just all, and
really
we got a black
cool.
hole, off to commercial, you know, and I'm just all, great, you know, that's the world we live in. All right, you're listening to Radio Wasteland. When we come back, we have our guest, Lawton Anderson, better known in the real world as Stacey Galloway. She is the author of... let's get the book title, The Dyatlov Pass Incident. If you want to know what that is, well, you better come back.
Under the moon I saw you, so soon you A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
SST Oil on Windham Lane in Reading, your source for specialty fuels and oils, including kerosene and low-sulfur fuel oil. They feature Toyotomi heating systems and on-demand water heaters. Save $100 on a new Toyotomi home water heater and ask about special savings for residents affected by the car fire. Locally owned SST Oil, supporting the community through summer fires and winter snows. Stay warm and cozy with Toyotomi and SST Oil. 241-1167. 241-1167.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is the place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
This is the best of Radio Wasteland.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
All right. Welcome back to Radio Wasteland. And our guest, her pseudonym is Lawton Anderson, that she writes nonfiction under, but her real name, Stacey Galloway. And we're going to talk about the Dyatlov Pass incident. I have to look at the word every time I say it out loud. And she's going to help us understand what that's all about. Stacey, do you have there? Are you there with us?
I am. Hi. How are you?
Oh, good, good. You know, normally I start by asking people how they got interested in this, but, you know, we're going to come to that later because I think a lot of people just maybe don't even know what this is. So can you give us a really basic rundown of what this situation is, and then we'll dig into it a little further.
Sure. This happened in Russia in 1959 during what would have been called a winter hike at the time. And nine young people, ranging in age from 21, actually all in their 20s, except one was 37, went on a winter hike. This entailed walking in skis, basically. So rather than hiking on foot, they were walking on skis through the Siberian mountains. And they never came back. So, excuse me, search parties were sent out and found the tent first. the tent itself looked orderly, aside from the fact that it was collapsed, but, you know, from winds or whatever. But after the searchers lifted the tent and, you know, kind of pried it off the frozen ground, there were slashes, knife slashes on the side of the tent. And that raised some concern that the inside of the tent, the shoes were in piles, the clothes were in piles, the money was all there, their passports were all there, but the nine hikers weren't there. Well, what ended up happening is they started finding their bodies up to a mile away, but not all nine bodies were together. One was a half mile from the tent, one was three quarters of a mile. The rest were roughly about a mile, but not all in the same places. One was buried in the snow. Two were found near the remains of a campfire, but they didn't have their clothes, like their outer clothes on. They were down in, you know, their long johns and stuff like that, all frozen, all dead. The last four were found, and that really is what kind of brings the Dyatlov mystery. Not that, I mean, the whole thing is mysterious from, you know, the tent, the condition of the tent. It's collapsed. Things look orderly inside. Nothing's crushed or anything, but there's slashes on the side of the tent. And now we've got the bodies up to about a mile away.
Right.
And those last four bodies, two of them had crushed ribs. Two of them were missing their eyes completely, even the skin around their eyes. One of them had a broken neck, and those injuries were I don't even want to say the most unusual, but finding those last four bodies kind of, like I said, came into the whole pinnacle of the mystery itself. So now you have nine very able hikers. They've all been on these long winter hikes before. They've endured different hardships. One had been bitten by a snake during a previous hike and came back and healed up, and she went out again. Another had been accidentally shot by a hunter, and again she healed and came back. The oldest of the group, the 37-year-old, was a World War II veteran. He had survived the war, had all sorts of decorations. And in fact, there's an interesting fact along with that, him, is that only 3% of the men born the year he was born, 1921, that served in World War II, only 3% were still alive. And he was one of those 3%.
At 37.
97% had perished in the war. So it kind of sets the stage for his abilities as well.
Right. Why were they on the winter hike? Is this a government thing or a school thing, or is this like a vacation thing?
Exactly. It was a combination. It was a hike that was sponsored through a university that half of them were still students in the university. The others were alumni, and then the 37-year-old, his name's Simon, he was actually applying to be an instructor there. So the university sponsored the hike, and they provided quite a bit of the supplies, although the students and alumni brought their supplies also. But the government itself at the time, now this is during the Cold War, the government of Russia liked to encourage athleticism, and they, you know, kept an eye on that. They were looking for the best athletes, and the best either pull them in for their own, the Olympics, or for further training, you know, in athleticism, or even for maybe military type duties. I mean,
I've seen Rocky IV. I know what they were doing. You know,
I'm sorry?
I said I've seen Rocky IV. I know what they were doing.
And you know, it's really hard
to get off and train all the bad guys.
and that era was just fascinating. I mean, Russia really had a, you know, hand grip on its citizens. It was even these hikes themselves, although coordinated through the university and authorized through the government, The government, the Russian government itself didn't allow citizens to have maps. Now, people could, you know, draw maps. I suppose you could buy maps, you know, on the black market or whatever, but only official military, Russian officials themselves could actually legally own a map. So the saying back then was, if you didn't, well, one, you couldn't have a map, but if you didn't know where you were going, then you weren't supposed to be going there. So these hikes, although, like I said, sponsored through the university and then encouraged through the government, they didn't, you know, the government didn't take that extra step with, like, okay, here's an official map of the area. A lot of these students would, you know, pass maps back and forth. In fact, it was somebody's job along the hike to kind of sketch and map out where they were.
Sure.
And stuff like that. So,
as far as we know, they weren't there for any sort of scientific reason. They were just there purely recreationally in athleticism.
It really was. It really was. Now, they belonged to a hiking club at the university itself, and the hiking club had three tiers of hikes that they would allow the students to go on, with a Category 1 being the easiest, a Category 2 being kind of medium, and then Category 3 being this extreme one. Where, now the point of a Category 3, which is what this hike was classified as, one, several of them were qualifying for this Category 3, but several of them had already done these. I'd say it was probably about half. In fact, there were only two. Well, there were two that really weren't up at the Category 3 level yet. They were approved to go. All this had to be run through the university and ultimately the government. They were approved. So the point of the Category 3 hike itself is, one, they're going on skis, you know, so they're basically like ski walking or skiing, you know, across all this terrain. Snow's 12 foot deep. It's January. I mean, it's negative 30 degrees at night. It's just really, really harsh conditions. The other expectation with a Category 3 is no form of communication. They weren't allowed to bring, like, a radio to communicate back and forth. I mean, they were pretty far out there anyway, so there wouldn't have been a lot of people to communicate with. But even, you know, some sort of a radio for emergencies and stuff like that. But the other expectation is they would be carrying all their supplies themselves. There were no sleds. They weren't pulling sleds. This was all the tent, the food, any equipment. Everything was carried in backpacks on their backs.
We don't have too long until a commercial. We got about 2 minutes here until the break. But when we found them, were they lost or were they on the path that we expected them to be on?
I realize
there was about a mile radius that they were either running or separated or whatever. But were they close to where we expected them to be?
The tent itself wasn't on the official course that they had submitted for their itinerary. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of folks that are much more expert at the map thing than, and I'm in awe of the folks that have looked at that, that say that some of the deviations could have come from some landmarks. They could have chosen to go the particular route they went for some reason. So that finding the tent itself took a few days. You know, I mean, airplane searches, kind of looking for tracks. The bodies themselves, it really didn't make sense for where the bodies were. They were in a straight line from the tent, but they were not like back on the trail they had just come from or anything. They were just kind of straight down the slope where the tent was, down the slope, and then up a 15-foot cliff. So they had to climb this cliff, and then the bodies. And that was the furthest bodies, those last four. And then from that furthest point, all the way back to the tent was almost like a straight line of bodies. And
let me cut you off there. We're about to do come up on break here, but I got to say that straight line really brings to a lot more questions to mind here. But we're going to break here. You're listening to Stacey Galloway here on Radio Wasteland. We're talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident. And if you don't find this interesting, you might have the wrong show. Come on back.
It was back in 32 when times were hard. We had a Colt 45 and a deck of cards. You wore rags on shoes and an old was on my stereo. As one threw him out on the ice and the snow, and she told him never ever come back.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004. But our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
Almost 50% of people in Shasta County have prediabetes, but only 1 in 10 know they have it. The good news is, prediabetes can be reversible with lifestyle and diet changes. The Shasta Family YMCA is offering a new program that is recognized by the CDC to improve your health and reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes. If you desire long-term healthy change in the new year, the YMCA can help. Go to sfymca.org for the diabetes prevention program information or call the YMCA at 768-2185.
Memorial Day is May 27th, a day set aside to honor those who've gone before us and given their lives for their country. I'm Rob Burrows reminding you about the special programs this Memorial Day. Starting at 10 a.m. at the Reading Memorial Park on Continental Street in Reading, Memorial Program with refreshments. Also starting at 11 a.m. is the Memorial Day service at Anderson at the Anderson Cemetery, hosted by the Anderson VFW Post 9650. Followed by an evening program at the Igo Veterans Cemetery, beginning at 5:55 p.m. with a flyover. It's recommended you get to these events early because parking fills up fast. For more information, you can call the Igo Veterans Cemetery at 530-396-2447. 530-396-2447.
This Chamber of Commerce Minute is brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning.
Are you tired of worrying if your business will survive till the economy gets better? Worry no more. The Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce has the tools to help you with your small business. From valuable networking events to educational seminars, we are here in your community. People do business with people they know. Get closer to your future customers by joining the Reading Chamber of Commerce today. As a member, you will participate in referral programs, member-to-member discounts, free listing on the Chamber website, and your company name listed in our business directory with a distribution of 5,000 copies to potential customers. Call us at 225-4433 to find out how you can meet your new customers and build your business.
This moment's been brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, professional cleaning services, 221-5868. Why not get the best?
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
This is the best of Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460.
You gotta have fear in your heart. You gotta have fear.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. We're talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident with our guest, Stacey Galloway. You know, as you were talking about this, you know, there is a trail, a straight line. This is, I actually have it here in my I take notes as you talk with questions that I may want to ask. And that was
Sean's
one of
a good student.
I am a good student. You know, the straight line implies to me that they ran as a group from something and were picked off one by one, because why would they all go in a straight line and die along the way? So really what I want to cover in this segment is, what do we think happened? You know, surely there's at least one theory, but I'm guessing there are several.
There really are, and there really are a lot of theories. So if we look at what we know, and one of the things is I've already mentioned, the 10 itself is, you know, in good shape but collapsed but with slash marks. So as folks look at that and that straight line, it kind of reads like a story. Oh, they slashed their way out of the tent. They ran a mile down the mountain, and something killed them one by one, or they all ended up as a group a mile away and started trying to come back. So that's kind of the story it tells. But if we look at what we have, which are, well, unfortunately, the bodies themselves and the injuries, or even before we even get to the injuries, if we look at the bodies themselves, they weren't wearing shoes. So, nor their coats, but, you know, we'll focus on the shoes for just a second. So we're talking about negative 30 degree weather, nighttime, and a mile. Now, in a diary entry just prior to this happening, the group had written down that they were making about a mile an hour progress. Now, this is on their skis, completely garbed out. Of course, they've got their backpacks on, but that's the type of progress they were making. Now, so if we look at that, and we're looking at their barefoot or in their socks, and they're a mile away, did they willingly walk or run a mile from their tent in their bare feet? I mean, you really have to think about what type of fear or what type of thing would send you pell-mell to really your death barefoot in the snow in negative 30 degree weather and then be up to a mile away. Something happened. Something happened in that tent. And now when we look at the tent, like I said, it's orderly. The only sign of disorder are the slashes. So this wasn't a group drug hallucination. That's one thing that comes up. You know, they decide to try drugs out in the Siberian wilderness this one night, and they freaked out. You know, nothing really accounts for it. We're talking about nine very experienced, at least in this situation, hikers who are going to leave their only form of shelter, barefoot, not dressed appropriately, and walk an hour away. So the theories, the most prevailing theory is avalanche. You know, an avalanche ran over the tent, and, you know, of course they would have had to leave at that point. They have no more shelter. But I've said it probably way too many times at this point, but things weren't crushed in the tent. The crackers weren't crushed. Right. There was a cup of cocoa still sitting there, frozen, but still sitting there. A sandwich. I mean, there was just no sign of this chaotic craziness happening in the tent. So whatever happened, you know, that drove them out of the tent wasn't something like that, avalanche. Another interesting one, people come up with this an ice slab came rushing down the mountain and crushed them and hurt them. Again, we have to account for them being a mile away, barefoot, not dressed appropriately for the weather. Of course, when their bodies were found, they had frostbite, you know, on all their limbs, and there's still no shoes or anything.
Right, and snow would still be there. They would be buried. I mean, it's not like snow. I mean, I get the concept. Okay, so here's this avalanche, here's this ice slide or something, and maybe they're in the tent, they hear the crash, they hear the bang, they get out of there as soon as possible so they can see. They're not really dressed, but they're just, oh, okay, what's this crazy bang? And while out there, missing the tent, maybe they get swept away. But evidence of that would still be there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Crushed tree, something. I mean, the folks that found them were able-bodied outdoorsmen also. Some were lifelong outdoorsmen, hunters, people from the village. There were, and that's one thing, you know, when we look at the situation, we're looking at the original investigative files, and to a T, they're all, you know, there's no sign of an avalanche. There's just no sign. There's no sign of this ice slab. The trees aren't crushed. There's nothing. Even another interesting one was a herd of animals, you know, trampled over them in the tent, a herd of deer or whatever would be out there. But again, no sign of that. Now, their footprints were found outside the tent. One theory says they walked themselves in an orderly manner away from the tent like they were going to go make a bonfire somewhere. But it's not orderly. I do have those photos in my book, and it's kind of a chaotic scene. Now, unfortunately, forensic, you know, technology wasn't around back then. Nobody really thought to take a bunch of photos, and when they did, they were using the actual cameras from the actual hikers themselves. So, you know, that kind of adds to some of the confusion. But the footprints that we do have photos of outside the tent, it shows kind of a chaotic scene. There's a few handprints in there. There's really not a rhyme or reason. You don't see this straight line walking down. It kind of looks like a gathering. And interestingly enough, also, they found a lot of small items outside the tent, things that would have come out of pockets. And the hikers themselves, when they were found, the few that did have coats on, there wasn't anything in their pockets. But one had his gloves in his pocket, but they weren't on his hands. Some of the injuries go along with this is they had some abrasions around their forehead and their eyelids. Some of them had abrasions around their wrists. And this isn't even getting to the big injuries, like one of them had a third-degree burn, third-degree all up and down his leg. And you know, we've already talked about the crushed ribs, the missing eyes, the missing tongue.
What explains that? So was the tongue cut out or was it bitten out? Do we know?
Well, there. Unfortunately, that's another thing. The autopsies themselves don't actually go. He goes into a lot of detail with the clothes. I mean, he talks about things being buttoned, unbuttoned, and what color the clothes are. But when it came to that tongue, the coroner just said tongue and diaphragm of the mouth is missing, and what that means is the entire inside of her mouth was missing, and the tongue, all the way down to the hyoid bone, which is that little fragile bone in your neck that tends to get broken if you get strangled or choked or whatever. So
that kind of implies to me that it was eaten out. You know, that kind of implies to me that something came along and maybe ate it post mortem.
Right, and one thing I would like to bring up in this is for folks that, you know, there are some folks that are familiar with the Diaslav Pass mystery. There are a lot of facts out there, but one thing as I was researching it and I was looking at the original investigative files, one of the things that hasn't really come to the forefront that I did include in my book is what's called a histology report. They went and microscopically looked at these areas of injury. They looked at that tongue area, and what they were looking for is signs of cellular bleeding, which would mean it would have happened while she was alive. With that, there was no sign of cellular bleeding in that tongue area. So that does go to the theory that scavengers, something ate it. But her eyes were missing also. That showed signs of cellular bleeding. That means that her eyes were removed while she was alive.
Man, this is like the greatest horror film, you know. They actually made a horror film of it called The Devil's Pass, but it wasn't great. But, man, this is like, you know, I'm a raging horror aficionado, and this story to me is just over the top, just intense. All right, Stacey, we're coming up on another break here. We're talking to Stacey Galloway about her book, The Diatlov Pass Incident. And, man, this is absolutely terrifying. As I'm sitting here talking to Stacey, I'm watching Kara's face, and she has, like, this horrific look on her face this whole time because it's like, you know, the handprint. You know, as soon as you said about the handprint, she's just like, oh, my gosh. All right, you're listening to Radio Wasteland with our guest, Stacey Galloway. Come on back.
Don't lose faith. But I heard a rumbling Have you heard the latest? Gavin Newsom and his liberal allies want to overturn Prop 13 so they can raise property taxes. They even want a new tax on our water. That's why we need Kevin Kiley in the state Senate. Kevin Kiley is the only candidate for Senate with a perfect rating from the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. Kevin Kiley will fight to stop Newsom's water tax and save Prop 13. Republican Kevin Kiley, the tax fighter for state Senate.
Paid for by Kevin Kiley for Senate 2019.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Attention all hands. Manning the Watch is a show by veterans for veterans covering every branch of the uniformed service.
Listen every Saturday at 10 a.m. for the news and information all veterans need to know nationally and right here in Shasta County.
Listen live or streaming on the chat room at KCNR1460.com. Welcome aboard every Saturday morning for Manning the Watch, 10 a.m. on KCNR.
Are you looking for a place with a fun and relaxing atmosphere to unwind after a long workday? Kelly's Pub and Wine Bar has just what you're looking for. Easy to find at 2155 Hilltop Drive. Let owners Robert and Rhonda Hansen welcome you to your new favorite spot in town. Kelly's Pub and Wine Bar has a great selection of beer on tap, fine wines, weekly live music, and a food menu that's currently the best-kept secret in Reading. Open Tuesday through Saturday starting at 4. Clean, classy, and relaxing. Head to Kelly's Pub and Wine Bar. By far, the friendliest bar.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally-owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
This is the best of Radio Wasteland.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. We're talking to our guest, Stacy Galloway, about the Dyatlov Pass incident. You know, some of the sort of paranormal conspiracy explanations for this are potential infrasound testing, you know, causing panic attacks, military test. And
Yetis.
Yeah, there is actually one about the Discovery Channel in 2014 had a special called The Russian Yeti, The Killer Lives, that explored the theory of the Dyatlov group was killed by a Menk or Russian Yeti. You know, but I got to put it out there to you, Stacy. You wrote this book. What do you think happened?
Well, when it comes right down to it, when we look at the string of injuries, the unusualness of the tent itself, like I said, the abrasions on the eyelids, and all their injuries themselves start to tell a story. And, you know, we're looking at abrasions around their wrists, abrasions around their ankles. Again, small trinkets around the tent. It to me, it all points to somebody or a group of somebodies forced them out of that tent and took them away and caused their murders.
So you think it might be like, Russian yokels? You know, like wood people?
Well, interestingly enough, that's
I don't know what to call them, you know, I mean. But, yeah, so, you know, like crazy wrong turn, you know, you know, right. Mountain Inbreds or something. I don't know.
Right. There's a local native group that lives there called the Mansi, but they're a gentle, peaceful tribal people, kind of along the lines of, you know, just on the land. They've never done this type of thing before. So they were almost immediately ruled out. There is a local hunter. This is kind of an interesting twist to it. One of the last words in Zena's diary, one of the females, there were two females in the group. The last word in her diary was the name Rempel, R-E-M-P-E-L. And interestingly enough, he was one of the last people to talk to the group before they actually set off into the wilderness. Nobody knows what that conversation was about. The reason why we know that happened is because there was a 10th member of the group that turned back. He had a nerve condition. He didn't feel like he'd be able to complete that rigorous hike, so he turned back. He saw that conversation, but didn't think to ask, you know, what was that about? So that's kind of an interesting little thing. So if we're talking about murder, and really the pieces fit together for that, the chest injuries could be somebody kneeling on their chest. We know the eyes were removed while they were alive.
Yeah,
the group didn't do it to each other.
Well, you know, that is one of the other, you know, as I've pointed out, I'm a horror movie fan. Have you ever seen Jacob's Ladder?
I haven't, and it's on my list, actually, on Netflix. It's either Netflix or Amazon, but
did you
no,
spoil
I haven't.
It? Did they turn on each other?
Well, no, I didn't. I didn't spoil it, but, you know, there is these possibilities that, you know, I think some of the government stuff, because we know that they were shady. We know that our government was shady at the time because we were in this Cold War. We were doing a lot of shady things in order to try to get the upper hand in the name of security. And they were doing the same. And I wouldn't put it past them, especially with, you know, a lot of the descriptions that you've given of the way they support athleticism, they're looking for the best. I mean, it's very Nazi-esque, you know, sort of attitude towards their people as being a tool more so than their people. And you
only
know,
the strongest of you will make it through.
Right, yeah, totally. You know, it's like I wouldn't put it past some sort of military testing or testing of a tool or testing of a drug. You know, I mean, it is within the realm of possibility.
Right. And interestingly enough, after those last four bodies were found, which were the most horribly injured, the ones, like I said, with the missing eyes and the crushed ribs, the autopsies were done rather rapidly. The whole area was shut down for years and years after that. Now, this is an area that had been used by civilians, and this isn't the only hiking club out there. All the universities had their own hiking clubs, and there were several hiking clubs within that particular university, too. So the entire area was shut down. So it really does. It points to that the government knowing something. The files were classified up through the 90s, I believe. This is so many – I mean, for as big as this mystery is and as many people that were killed – or found dead, this isn't like a worldwide, it's still a new subject to a lot of people. The files were classified up until the 90s. A journalist actually wrote a book about it, and the rumors are he had to change some things in it. There's also a rumor that the entire file, although it says it's been released to the public now and unclassified, there's a lot of rumors that that's not actually the case. A lot of the photos with the official file that's been released, a lot of photos were actually loose in envelopes and don't belong to any particular camera film. There's people that have devoted years and years just to match these photos to whose camera they came out of.
Right.
And there's still photos that came out of the official file that were supposedly taken by the hikers themselves that don't fit in any particular roll of film that we have access to.
Right.
So it really does. Everything you were saying, Chauncey, it just kind of looks, there's pieces missing. These pieces don't fit all together. And, you know, the government, especially back then, Cold War, nuclear arms race, this is, you know, a very, very different world.
Right.
And Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the show here. Before we finish this up, I definitely have to thank our engineer, Jared, for bringing this topic to light. You know, this was something that we had heard about, but Jared actually brought it up and said that we had to have it on the show. So thank you, Jared. Although, you know, he's in there watching otter videos, I think. And Stacey, how can people find out about this book, get a copy of your book, and find out more about you?
It's on Amazon. It's called Death of Nine, The Dyatlov Pass Mystery. It is published under Lawton Anderson. My name is Stacey Galloway. I use that pen name for this book. I write horror stories under Stacey Galloway myself. But I also have a website, StaceyGallowayAuthor.com. I'm also on Facebook, Stacey Galloway. But like I said, the book itself, it's out there on Amazon. It's free for Amazon Prime. It's in an ebook form. It's a beautiful print form too, but they're all, you know, the same book. And it's again, Death of Nine, The Dyatlov Pass Mystery. Lots of stuff in there. I've got the official autopsies. I've got that histology report I talked about with the, that talks about the wounds bled, so the missing eyes and stuff. I've got the illustrations of the injuries themselves, not to sound morbid, but just kind of an illustration showing where these different injuries were. There's a lot of information in that book that you're not going to find just out on the internet somewhere. I spent years and years and years pulling this all together. I wrote the book that I wish had existed when I started researching this, and I really, really hope it helps everybody, from the folks that, you know, just don't know a single thing about this mystery to the people that have read everything, and I think it'll benefit anybody who wants to know just a little bit more about it.
And it is interesting, and I wouldn't worry about the drawings. I have a feeling with this story, morbidity is par for the course.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stacey, thank you very much for coming on the show. This is a topic that we were very excited to have, and you definitely gave us all the backstory that we were missing, and I really appreciate it, and it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it, and you all have a very, very nice evening. Thank you.
You too. You've been listening to Stacey Galloway here on Radio Wasteland, talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident. You can find out more about her by looking up Stacey Galloway or Lawton Anderson, the pen name that she wrote the nonfiction under. Stacey Galloway, is a horror fiction writer, so Lawton Anderson for the nonfiction. All right, thanks for checking us out, and check us out next week.
News from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.